Friday, April 6th meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. We have one bill posted for a public hearing this morning, another for a work session. I think since we've got witnesses here, we'll go ahead and take the public hearing first. So I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3466. Mr. Stembridge, please tell us about this bill.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, this is House Bill 3466 for election as Soil and Water Conservation District Director. When no qualifying nominee appears on the ballot, it authorizes qualifying write-in candidates to request that write-in votes be tallied. When no qualifying write-in candidate has made such a request, it prohibits elections officers from counting any write-in votes and authorizes the Soil and Water Conservation District Governing Board instead to fill the position by appointment. It delineates the circumstances under which an SWCD director vacancy is to be declared and filled by appointment by the SWCD Governing Board, SWCD meaning Soil and Water Conservation District.
And it looks like there's a staff measure summary on this bill. Do members have a copy of that? I don't seem to have one. Do other members have a copy of the staff measure summary?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, I guess it's just me then. Okay.
It's in the bottom of the stack.
Oh, I may have mixed it up with the other bill then.
Today's stuff is the last page.
So we have several people signed up to testify. I don't know if they were planning to come up together or individually, but you two are together. Okay, so we'll call John McDonald, and are you Jan Coleman? Okay, why don't you two come up? Welcome to the Elections Committee, and if you could please identify yourself for the record and then go ahead and tell us what you want us to know.
Yes. Good morning. My name is John McDonald. I am president of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts. Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, good morning. I guess this is both a Good Friday, and if you are very different persuasion, then I hope you have a Good Friday. And if not, a better weekend. This particular bill does a number of things that are important to conservation districts, as was mentioned in the summary. It does clarify some things that have been sort of out there in the wilderness for a number of years about, you know, exactly how do we do this, or when does this circumstance get taken care of, and how and by whom and so forth. So some of this is exactly kind of housekeeping, house cleaning type of issues, along with introducing a couple new concepts which we'll mention as we get to it. We're requesting, of course, approval of this bill, but we've also come up with recent discussions among the county clerks, the Department of Agriculture, and conservation districts themselves. We're suggesting our own amendment, actually, which is in the written testimony that I have in paragraph 2. And that would be that on page 2 of the bill, section 2, subparagraph 2, lines 20 and 21, to take one sentence and replace it with the wording which I put there. And that is, the person must file the declaration or request with the Department of Agriculture no later than 14 days before the date of the election. The insertion of the Department of Agriculture is because people kept asking after they would look at the bill and say, by the way, to whom do we send this? And we thought, very good question. I'm sorry we didn't answer it in the first place, but I think we should at least get around to doing that at this time. So, and the second question came about is, well, what is the last possible day to give people the opportunity to be able to file a declaration of intent that they wish to be a write-in candidate and to have their write-ins counted? So this was a long discussion over a number of days and actually months with the elections officers and again the department and the districts about, you know, well, how would this work and who would do what to the form and so forth. And we arrived at a consensus that 14 days would be reasonable, allowing that to be the notice to the Department of Agriculture of the intent of the individual. And then that gives them plenty of time to notify the county prior to beginning the process of counting write-ins to ballots. So that takes the interest in making the amendment, even at this last minute.
Excuse me, Mr. McDonald, has somebody, or do you have that amendment in process, or is that something you're asking the committee to do?
The amendment is for the first time presented in the testimony paper, which has been given to you this morning, Chair Rosenbaum.
So you're requesting us to get it drafted then?
Yes, ma'am. Chair, that would be our request right now.
Okay.
This is one of those cases where it's called hot off the press. We arrived at a final consensus decision amongst the three of us yesterday afternoon. So it's difficult to get it into all the proper protocols at this time. We apologize for that delay.
That's no problem.
Okay. The other issues that are dealt with in the bill have to do with defining who the elections officer is. The Department of Agriculture has been functioning as the elections officer for conservation districts for many years, but individuals throughout some of the counties and other places have questioned, well, is this something we're supposed to be doing, or is it something the Department of Agriculture is supposed to be doing? In other words, who's responsible for doing all this work? And when we went to the Secretary of State for clarification, the answer was kind of like, well, it's not quite clear. So why don't you do something to make it clear since you're already doing it? And so this language was put in to establish so it would be clear to everybody that it is the Department of Agriculture who is the elections officer. Section 2 in 568, 530, 2 and 3 in page 2 is this section that we are asking that a process be set up allowing for people to do a declaration of intent and a request for write-ins to be counted for individuals who wish to write in. Right now, there have been a number of instances, and I've kind of cited one down here at the last paragraph on the first page, that when no candidate is on the ballot for a director position, the county election officials have to count all the write-ins. In some cases, this has been an enormous task. And I know that Mr. Paul Reed is going to be able to cite a specific one from Lane County, and also Jan Coleman has one from East Multnomah, I believe, that show just how much really it cost and how much time and unnecessary work, and then sometimes not even arriving at a valid candidate who's eligible for the position. The other major clarifications here are, when does a position become vacant? Some of them are obvious. A person in position dies or moves out of state or maybe moves to another county and is no longer eligible because of the land requirements, land ownership requirements and so forth. We even had one that came up rather interesting this year, and that was a person was elected. In fact, several people were elected to a district as new directors, came in for the oath of office and refused to take it. What do we do? Well, they're elected official. They have the position. Our rules are if you don't take the oath of office, you can't do business, you can't vote, you can't operate as a director on the board. So the board is stuck there with, maybe even having a less than majority. So we had to make some items about, well, what do we do in circumstances when these types of things happen? And derive a contingency. So some of this language is here is to try to give us some fallback positions of being able to handle situations such as this. I won't belabor anymore. I've taken plenty of time for explanation. I'll be happy to answer any questions or refer to Jan, and there may be questions.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Buckley.
Thank you. So I have to ask, what reason they gave for being unwilling to take the oath of office?
Chair Rosenbaum and Representative Buckley, very simple. They looked at the situation in more detail than they understood when they first ran for election, and found out that there were situations involved with the district for which they did not want to take liability.
Ah, very good. Okay, thank you.
And that's one of the issues. I mean, we're not paid.
That's the ethics thing.
Some people come up and say, I just don't want to be responsible for all this stuff, you know, and the protections I've got aren't sufficient, so forget it.
And they, wow.
Just a comment along that note, you know, we do have irrigation districts and others in the state that have no one ever run, and they have not had a board since the 1940s for exactly that reason.
Yes.
And sometime we're going to have to figure that out as a state, because the things that they are responsible for are very important, and if we have set up a situation where it's impossible for them to find people to do those important tasks, I think we have some concerns that we're going to have to address at that point, especially with the liability issues.
Chair Rosenbaum and Representative Roblin, with your permission, I'd like to quote you in a number of newspapers on that very fact.
Yeah,
thank you very
fine.
Much for making that statement, sir.
Yeah.
Other questions? Okay, please go ahead.
Okay. Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, I'm Jan Coleman, and today I'm representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks. And it's a great pleasure to say we are very much in favor of this bill, and I thought you would really like that coming from the clerk.
It's such a better day.
Let's vote now.
I kind of took over working with John and the department last session because we had a similar bill and we were trying to get it through and so forth, and we did not. So we've been on this trek for 4 years. And anyway, it's been a good relationship. We've learned a lot of things and hashed out a lot of things, and I certainly appreciate all the cooperation with everyone. We just want to point out that this does help us with clarification of the department, as far as definitely they are the filing officer, definitely they are going to do the advertisement and the research that is involved each time with directors. There was a little confusion there, and this just definitely says they're going to do that work and the clerks are not. So we're glad to have that clarification in this bill. The other thing that, of course, is a real advantage to clerks is the fact that if no candidate files, and they have an opportunity to have a bona fide write-in candidate file. If none of those people do, then we just do not count those write-in votes. And the reasoning behind all that is because most of these conservation districts are countywide. And some of them actually have several in their counties, too. So, as an example, in 2004, Multnomah County has several districts in their county, but they had three positions in two soil and water districts on the ballot, and it was a total cost to the county for tallying the write-ins of $20,040. And when they got all done with that, then in the case of the three positions, none of those people qualified for the positions. So they'd spent $20,000 doing the tally and so forth, and nobody qualified. So at least by getting a write-in candidate who comes on late when no one files, this person would already be a qualified person. And, you know, nobody minds spending the money to tally for those people then if we know that at least it's a valid candidate. You know, it's a really good fiscal thing for counties, I might say, because we are the ones that put that part of the bill. In November of this last year, I have a few districts or counties who spent money. Josephine County, around 50,000 registered voters, they spent 138 hours. Extracting at a cost of $1,221, and their person did not qualify. Smaller county, Clatsop County, they had three of four positions, no candidate filed. It took them 59 hours to tally for $634. And Multnomah County, again, they had one no filing this time. They actually had one contested race. Anyway, their no candidate filed this time, one time in last November, was $7,500.
Okay. Well, thank you. We're certainly delighted to have your testimony today. Any questions? Does not look like it. Okay. Thank you both for your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Thank you.
And we have two other witnesses to testify. Representative Greenlick, I see that you're in the room. Are you on a are you in a big hurry, or can you wait just a moment here? Okay. Okay. We'll call Paul Reed and Larry Ojua. Good morning to you both. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. My name is Paul Reed. I'm a director with East Lane Soil and Water Conservation District and a member of the Executive Board of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts. This morning I want to just give you a little anecdote about what happened in Lane County in 2004 to illustrate some of the points that Jen was just making. In 2004 we had one position that didn't qualify, or didn't, I'm sorry, that didn't file. If you look on page 3 of the bill, lines 6 and line 8, you'll see the specific qualifications for directors of soil and water conservation districts. We ended up with over 4,000 write-ins in the Lane County ballot that year, and it cost the county a little over $14,000 to go through and hand tally those, because they have, the machine doesn't pick them up. They have to put them on a spreadsheet. And they ended up with a stack that was about 4 inches high of spreadsheets. The dominant write-in candidate received 35 votes, and it turns out that that candidate was not qualified. It would... Some investigation on our part revealed that the candidate was actually a magician that had a nightclub act, and he'd received his mail-in ballot 14 days before the election and thought, oh, gee, this would be really neat to be in, a lot of fun to be in a public office and maybe make some extra money. Didn't know who we were. Didn't know what we did, didn't know what the qualifications were, but he told the people that were in his audience for 2 weeks, two Saturdays in a row there, that vote for me, write my name in. And so they did, and he got 35 votes. But he wasn't qualified to run, or to take the office. So we ended up with that kind of a workload on the county clerk, and actually no candidate to fill. So we ended up having to appoint somebody for that position. That essentially is my testimony.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. From the record, my name is Larry Ojua. I'm the program manager with the Oregon Department of Agriculture with the Soil and Water Conservation District program. And as John McDonald mentioned, we are the filing officer for Soil and Water Conservation Districts and have a number of other administrative responsibilities related to districts. So I'm here today to say that we support the bill. We understand we've been working with the conservation districts and the county clerks for the last 3 or 4 years about the concern of the write-ins. And that's one provision in the bill that this addresses. The other part of the bill that wasn't discussed much was an item that allows a district board to increase their membership from 5 to 7. And we have a couple districts in particular interested in doing that. Interesting, the law allows to go from 7 to 5, but not from 5 to 7. And in this case, we've got a couple districts that have recently secured a taxing authority, and they think it would be nice to have broader representation and more directors on the board. So we support that as well. I do want to say that one of the efforts we have at the department and with the conservation districts is to try to do whatever we can to increase participation. There are different reasons why there might be vacancies on the board. Sometimes the district misses the deadline to publish the notice in the paper, so then they legally can't have anybody on the ballot. So there was a couple situations this last year where that happened. The good thing is in Jan Coleman's and Yamhill County in her district, we had one position that had four people competing for the same position. In Marion County, we had five positions all contested. So we're seeing more and more interest in conservation districts, and they're doing a lot of good things. So that's the positive side. So I'm here to answer questions about our responsibilities if you have any, but we support this bill.
Any questions?
Yes, Representative Thatcher.
This may be just a comment. It just seems like it's costing the counties a lot of money, and in light of what's happening with the dwindling resources, it seems like it would behoove us to help them out in this manner. It seems like a no-brainer.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Representative Roblin.
Just a couple of questions. With respect to ODA, they are in alignment with being the elections officer, and they kind of felt they were, I think, all along, even though it hasn't been explicit. Number two, how are most of these districts funded? Are they all different? Because I think that that is part of the issue that came up about liability, is having enough money to buy that insurance that some of them do.
Okay. Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Roblin. Districts are, I'll take the funding first. Districts are funding in a lot of different ways. We actually have 10 districts in the state that have their own permanent tax rate, and that certainly allows them a lot of a latitude to fund a professional manager and cover a lot of their administrative expenses. The department funds a small amount of administrative money to each district, and we also have contract money that we contract for them to perform technical assistance. Districts are pretty aggressive at seeking grants and fundraisers and a number of things. So they're funded a lot of different ways. They also work closely with U.S. Department of Agriculture and have a lot of agreements with them, what they call contribution agreements, where they can match up money to do technical work. In regard, the second question was
ODA being the elections.
Filing officer, yes. We've been the filing officer. I've been in this business for about 20 years. I worked at Yamhill County for 13 years. I've been with the department almost 8 years. The department's always been the filing officer. We actually have a responsibility if a district forms or changes their boundaries to administer those types of things. So we believe we have no problem with continuing that role.
Okay. Well, thank you both for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 3466? Okay, then, members, we will work on the amendment that's been suggested to this bill, and I'm sure we will be taking it up again. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3466, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2082. I see that we have Representative Greenlich with us, and it is certainly our protocol here to allow legislators to testify when they wish to. So why don't, even though it's a work session, why don't you come forward, and we'd be happy to hear from you. Good morning, Representative Greenlich, and welcome to the Elections Committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I can't tell you how much I miss serving on this committee this year. I've done it last year. Thank you very much for giving me a chance to testify. I am here to comment on the... I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlich, House District 33. And I'm here to testify on the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2082. Basically, I have a very short statement on this. My sense is that this bill is an important bill. It's an even more important bill with the Dash 4 amendments. I've read comments about the Dash 4 amendments, and there are ways that things could probably be perfected. But somewhere along the line, you have to move on things, and I think you're at a place where it makes sense now. I think the bill with the Dash 4 amendments really improves the process in a lot of ways. I particularly like the web-based single petition sheet that can be copied off the web, signed, and sent in. I do hope the language is clear enough that it requires only one signature, not two, but I think that can be handled easily by the form itself and its development. And I just encourage you to, I'm glad you're in work session, and I encourage you to move ahead on House Bill 2082 with the dash four amendments and moving on in the process.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. Thanks.
I just have a comment. Members have the dash five amendment. The difference between the dash four and the dash five is changes in some effective dates, and that's all. Otherwise, everything that you said applies to the dash fives.
I'm sure the new dates are much better than the old dates.
I wasn't
going to
tell.
Thank you for allowing me to
testify. Thank you very much for your testimony. And members, as you have just heard, we are going to be considering the Dash 5 amendments that you should have in front of you. They were distributed today, and they are very similar to the Dash 4 amendments that people have seen. I think that what we'll do now is ask our committee administrator, Mr. Stembridge, to describe what is in the amendments, which basically replace the original bill. Good morning, Mr. Stembridge. Nice to see you.
I'm going to move down here because I need more space, and I'll be able to see the shock and amazement on your face is a little more quickly.
The delight, you mean, then?
This way, yes.
Delight and amazement.
In your packet is a section-by-section analysis of the Dash 5. I have copies of this for others in the audience here also. I'm going to start with first of all, the Dash 5s replace the bill. But I want to start with the bill to begin with so that you can see what's in and what's out. The basic bill, House Bill 2082, Section 2 has been removed. Section 4 and 5 have been reworked in the Dash 5 amendment. Basically, Section 4 of the original bill becomes Section 2 in the amendment. Section 5 in the original bill on templates becomes Section 3 in the amendment. And then the Section 6 of the original bill has been reworked as Section 8. Section 7 in the original bill has been reworked as Sections 31 through 38. And Section 8, the emergency clause, stays. So most of what is in the original bill is also in the amendment, with the exception of Section 2. And the catch line of the bill comes out of Section 2, so the catch line will change. It no longer has anything to do with prohibiting persons other than persons signing a signature sheet from writing, altering, or obscuring, etc. Okay? With me so far?
So far, sir.
Okay, now what I'd like to do is just step down through the sections in the Dash 5 amendment based on the compilation that I worked into the evening on last night. So, Section 1 adds Sections 2 and 3 to ORS Chapter 250. This is the initiative and referendum section. Section 2 is the registration and training of paid signature gatherers. It requires paid signature gatherers to register and to complete training. This was, just to mention it again, this was part of the original bill. There's more detail in this. It describes what is needed for the application. It says that the SOS is required to complete registration within 2 days. It prohibits those convicted of fraud, forgery, ID theft within 5 years from registering. The signatures collected by unregistered signature gatherers are not to be counted. The registrant is to carry evidence of registration, including photograph and registration number. And a photograph, there are some specifics on what the photograph shall be.
And then it provides for the Secretary of State to adopt implementing rules for the registration and the training. That's Section 2. Section 3 is the section on signature sheet templates. It has the Secretary of State preparing the template. Persons obtaining signatures must use the Secretary of State template. The Secretary of State issues the template to the chief petitioner only or to an agent of the chief petitioner. The Secretary of State has deadlines for issuing the template. And then there's a deadline for written request for modification. Secretary of State prepares electronic template for signature of one elector to be printed, signed, and delivered to the chief petitioner by the elector. And this one, this has no witness requirement. This would be a new provision allowing single electors to sign a petition one at a time over the internet. And then the Secretary of State prescribes the template contents and production method by rule. How am I doing? Am I going too slowly, too fast?
You're doing just great.
Section 4 just places Sections 5 through 7 in the statute, ORS Chapter 260, which is the campaign finance chapter. Section 5 has definitions. It defines accounts, and these are important definitions because these account chief petitioners are required to keep the accounts. You'll see in subsection 2 of Section 5. The accounts, going back up to number 1, the accounts consist of contracts for signature gathering, employment or training manuals, payroll records showing hours worked, signatures collected, and payment amounts, the identification of the amount and purpose of chief petitioner payments to any contractor or subcontractor, and copies of signature sheets circulated by paid signature gatherers. Again, the chief petitioner is required to keep these detailed accounts. Secretary of State is required to review the accounts according to a regular schedule set by rule. The Attorney General or the Bureau of Labor and Industries may also review these accounts. The chief petitioner must preserve these accounts for at least 2 years. If a chief petitioner does not produce the accounts as required, it is a rebuttable presumption of a violation, and this is a violation of the Constitution. And the chief petitioner may not continue to obtain signatures. Accounts are not subject to disclosure as public records. Section 6 provides for cooperation among the three agencies, the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, and the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Section 7 addresses unreported potential violations. It has a definition of contractor and subcontractor, and it says violations by subcontractor, if known by the contractor, is also to be deemed a violation by the contractor. The contractor, however, is not liable if the contractor notifies the Secretary of State of a potential violation, and the provision does not apply to criminal violations. Moving on to Section 8. These are the number of signatures necessary for obtaining a ballot title. The Dash 5 Amendment increases that number from 25 to 1,000. The Secretary of State establishes a signature verification procedure by rule. And then you have conforming language in several of the subparagraphs. And then the signature sheet to include a notice describing the meaning of signature sheet colors. And then on down in Section 9 of Section 8, individual signatures are to be witnessed by signature gatherers. The current language and previous language has been the signatures must be in the presence of the signature gatherer. This changes it to witnessed by the signature gatherer. Moving on to Section 9, the preparation of the ballot title changes immediately to the next business day for the Secretary of State to send a prospective petition to the Attorney General. And then Section 10 is simply conforming language in the chapter on preparation of ballot title. Section 11, petition signature filing requirements. The signature is to be submitted for verification. Signature sheets to be sorted by signature gatherer. And the Secretary of State to establish a procedure for verifying the signature by rule, and the Secretary of State or the County Clerk to verify signatures. And then there's a provision in there in subparagraph 5 of section 11, it says, for a second sampling, if necessary, the signature duplication rate is to be based on determination of the number of electors who signed more than once. Section 12 has to do with contribution and expenditure C&E statements. The petition treasurers file C&E statements, the petition organization treasurers, and only electronically filed data required by ORS 260.083 are to be made available to the public. That is the public records reference. Moving on to section 13, the statement of organization and treasurer. It deletes the certification of the treasurer's name and address in that statute. This is ORS 260.118. It requires the treasurer to file a statement of organization within 3 days after contribution or expenditure. It requires the treasurer to file amended statement of organization if there's a change in the organization. It requires the treasurer to use Secretary of State electronic filing system for C&E statements. For initiatives, it requires C&E statements to be filed within 7 days after a contribution or expenditure during a 42-day period prior to 4 months prior to the general election. That generally includes the month of June. The word June does not appear in the statute, but that's what my calculations would say. These, subsection 5 of section 13 is one of the main differences between the dash 5 and the dash 4 amendment, this additional C&E filing, because it adds the 42 days prior, the 42-day period immediately prior to a primary or general election. For referenda and recall, it requires C&E statements within 7 days of all contributions or expenditures until the deadline for submitting petitions. For all petitions during the period not otherwise specified, it requires C&E statements within 30 days of the contribution or expenditure. Unreported contributions and expenditures made prior to the 40-day periods in subsection 5 must be reported by the 35th day prior to four months prior to the election or the 35th day prior to the primary or general election. So there's a change from 30 days to 7 days, and all it says is if you haven't reported in the 30 days prior, you must report within the first 7 days of that period. It deletes prior procedures and deadlines for filing statements of organization and C&E statements, and it says that the certifying signature is to be specified by Secretary of State rule. Section 14 is conforming language in these ORS on contributions from out of state. Now, you'll see sections 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, and 26 and 27 all change references in the statutes where it was signatures were to be signed in the presence of a signature gatherer to signatures are to be witnessed by the signature gatherer. I think they pretty much included any kind of public signature gathering there of electors. So I'm going to move on to number 29. Section 29 is a clarification: electronically filed data is to be held for 6 years and does not include the data that is not to be made available to the public. Section 30 is clarifying language. Section 31 is another, we start a series of applicability sections here. It says that the Section 2, which is the registration requirement, does not apply to 2008 general election initiatives or referendum petitions, but it applies to initiative and referendum petitions after the 2008 general election. And these are initiatives or referendums intended for that 2008 election. In some cases, they could be worked before the 2008 election, but they would be subject to the Section 2. And the Section 3 on templates does not apply to 2008 general election initiative or referendum petitions, but it applies to initiative and recall initiative and referendum petitions after that are aimed at after the 2008 general election. And it applies to recall petitions filed on or after the effective date of the legislation. There are a number of other applicability sections in here, and I can go through these if you would like. The difficulty with applying a lot of this language is that you have initiatives that are in preparation currently for the 2008 ballot, and before the 2008 ballot comes, you have some initiatives that may be in preparation for the 2010 ballot. These applicability sections lay out what is to be applied when. Am I violating our rule on too close to the microphone? I'm doing okay. I call your attention to Section 36. It says prior action. It says the Secretary of State and County Clerks may take any enabling action necessary before the 2008 January 1st. And it also retains the emergency clause, Section 39.
Okay, I think that completes the explanation of the bill. Did members have any questions for our administrator? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The emergency clause, why is the emergency clause in there? Most of this doesn't go into effect until pretty much next year.
The original bill came with an emergency clause. The amendment came with an emergency clause. It looks to me like, and I don't know, is the first answer. The second answer would be, if I were pressed, I would say that there are a number of things that need to be done ahead of time to apply these things. And then some of the applicability is at the time that the measure goes into effect.
Yeah, I think the answer, Representative, is that because of the need to start in motion some of the things that the bill calls for, that would be the reason. Okay, thank you very much for that explanation. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Representative Hunt.
Jim, very good explanation. You took through and you answered all but one of my questions, and maybe you did answer. I just didn't catch this one. All the way back to Section 2. It talks about the just refresh. I have my question written down here. I'm going to just remind myself what the question is referencing. This is about the whole registration form and what is actually being issued, and part of what's issued to the applicant to gather signatures is a list of the initiatives, referendum, and recall petitions on which they will gather signatures. We had some testimony earlier that some people might be gathering signatures on two or three or more initiatives at the same time. If they initially apply to just gather signatures on one, and then they decide they want to gather signatures on a second, is there a way to just amend that process, amend that form, or do they have to start the process all over again?
And I think we will shortly be hearing from the Secretary of State's Office, that's Elections Division. They may be able to answer
that
question.
Good point. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, any other questions for the administrator? Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if this is best for Dr. Simmeridge or not, but in Section 12, I believe it was, in terms of the filing of C&E statements, in the discussions we had made a request that the opponents to an initiative also be fall under the same requirements. And I'm not sure, in all the conversations we've had on this, somehow that kind of slipped out. And I'm wondering if you have any memory of that or whether...
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, I believe that the concern has to do with opponents during the signature gathering process, and I don't know that has been addressed in these. I believe that an organization that is actively fighting a ballot measure comes under these... campaign contribution regulations, but I'm not sure on that point.
We'll confirm that with Mr. Limbeck, I'm sure, for any clarification. Thank you, Dr. Stammeridge. I appreciate all your work.
And I apologize because I was otherwise occupied. I might have missed this, but was it clarified that in Section 2 of the bill, the issue was raised, I think, earlier by someone about whether with this electronic version with only one signature, whether you had to have an additional signature. And I think it's clear in these amendments that it says that the section which requires witnessing of the signature in 250045 does not apply. So
that's good. Very good.
Is that correct? Okay. I think then, and I want to let members know that we have a couple of members not here today. One of them, Representative Esquivel, who's been very ill all week, has requested to be able to vote by telephone. Apparently the House rules do not address that, so it's up to our discretion. I plan to allow him to vote by phone. And I do want to clarify.
Look, it's our clerk.
We have the expert here. Perhaps since the chief clerk is here, I think, would you like to maybe join us at the witness table for a minute just to clarify the answer to this question?
You want to just go into recess and talk?
Can you take for a second?
Oh, okay. So how about if we stand in recess for a moment? And members, after consulting with the chief clerk's office, I have learned that it has never apparently been allowed before for absent members to vote during session, although it has been allowed in the interim, and that in addition to that, under the provisions of the House rules, in order for a minority report to be filed by those voting no, you would physically have to be present. So I think in light of that, and we're not looking to establish any new precedents here, that we will thank Representative Esquivel for his willingness, but we will not be having him.
I just want to say thank you, Madam Chair, for considering this and for all the flurry of activity up here. It was mostly related to that.
That's where the audience members have seen us coming in going. That's exactly what
we
were discussing.
Your attempt to accommodate.
Okay, thank you. So I think that at this point we've had an explanation, and we do have the Elections Division of the Secretary of State's office in the room. I think they are prepared to come forward and also make some comments on this version. So if you'd like to do that now, that would be great.
It doesn't sound like that.
Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm John Lindbach, Director of Elections in the Secretary of State's office. I have with me Brenda Bays, Deputy Director of the Elections Division, who's here to bail me out in case I run into any problems explaining details, because she's been following the details of this more closely than I the past few days. But I would like to highlight some things for you in regards to the amendments. In regards to the sections relating to the registration by paid signature gatherers with the Secretary of State, they will turn in a one-page form, and I had asked for drafts of that form to be put in your packet so that you can take a look at it. They will turn in a one-page form and an acknowledgement form from the chief petitioner, a photo of themselves, and a certificate that shows that they have completed the training program. And there's also a sample of the certificate there for you. The training program will be a very quick tutorial that explains the laws around signature gathering, and at the end it will print a completion certificate for them to fill out. We intend to make this available online on our website and also distribute free CDs to the companies that employ signature gatherers so that they can show it to the people that they hire. I'd also am considering doing some training sessions with the people that employ signature gatherers are interested in doing that we would go out on the street and do that as well. We think that the whole training part of this is extremely important and could do a lot to significantly address some of the problems that we've been seeing on the street with signature gathering. The training program, again, I mentioned it would be quick. After mailing or emailing all of this to the SOS, they will be registered within 2 business days. And will receive a badge including their picture and a registration number. I'd like to also talk a little bit about the sequential numbering that was in the early or version that has been replaced essentially by the template sections that Mr. Stempridge referred to earlier. The intent of these sections is to take away a process right now, or to address a process right now that's very frustrating for both the chief petitioners and for us, and that the chief petitioners are required to come to us with proposed templates of signature sheets. We say, no, not good enough. Come back again. There's often, you know, 3-4 return trips. It takes a long time. We just think it would be more efficient if we just do the templates for them and that they have an opportunity to comment on them. And we have a lot of different kinds of templates, and we will continue to do that. These sections were clearly with the intent to make life easier for both the chief petitioners and for us on this grant.
I'm sorry, excuse me a moment. Yes, Vice Chair Buckley?
Do you want us to wait until Ms. Lumbeck's gone through, or can we ask questions by section, or how would you like to proceed, Madam Chair?
Is it okay with you if we interrupt you? Okay, why don't you go ahead and ask your question now?
Thanks. Just on what's been covered so far, Ms. Lumbeck, first on Representative Hunt's question about if a registered paid signature gatherer wanted to add another petition, what would you foresee the process of that being?
That they would simply supply to us another form that would have, as you see partway down the form, it asks them to list the initiative referendum or recall petition numbers on which you will gather signatures. They would just supply to us a second form, and we'll keep both forms on file.
And on the training, the content of the training, since that will be in rules, how do you anticipate the rules, that cost of developing the training to be? Would that be something the Secretary's office will do independently? Will you do it in conjunction with people involved with the initiative process? How do you foresee that going?
Well, thank you, Representative Buckley. We do a lot of training with people, and our general mode is to develop the training in-house and then pass it by people. To sort of test it in terms of effectiveness, including people that would be involved in the industry and so on. I mean, we want it to work, and so it would be in our best interest to do that.
There's been a concern expressed that it would be an intimidating training content, that potential signature gatherers should be scared off by the training. Do you have any response to that?
No, I mean, we want to encourage people to participate in the process. It will be sort of a congratulatory message saying congratulations and thank you for participating in this process. We want to make you aware of the rules, though, because following the rules is very important. Sort of go through the rules, many of which that we've talked about in these hearings, such as signing and dating the petitions and doing that after, after you've witnessed the signatures and several other examples that we've seen. No, there would be no attempt to intimidate people. And the whole idea here is to boost validity rates by increasing training and improving the process and giving the public more confidence in the process.
Very good, Minister. Thank you so much. And just one more question on the template. Ms. Lumbeck, there have been campaigns that have done templates so that they could fold the sheet over and mail a single sheet to someone. Would campaigns be able to work with you in the design of such a template?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I guess since we're asking questions anyway, the issue that had been raised earlier about the one... the electronic version where you could put your own name added on, and whether that would need an additional signature?
No, clearly the problem we're trying to address here is the problem of them signing it twice and then getting mixed up on dates and that kind of thing, and to eliminate that problem. So no, it would be sign it once.
Okay, please go ahead.
Okay. Let's see, where was I? The sections that deal with attestation, we have worked to clarify the obligation of the signature gatherers by replacing the requirement of presence, that word presence be in the presence of, when collecting signatures, with the requirement of witnessing the signatures. And we also included a line to clarify that the attestation at the bottom of the sheet should be signed when they have finished the sheet. And we, in that packet, same packet, give you examples of drafts of signature sheets that have the wording under the current petitions, and then what the wording would be under these amendments.
Yes, Representative Thatcher, go ahead.
I was just thinking about the witnessing part. I was just thinking about seeing impaired people. You know, they could be possibly be circulating a petition, and then somebody can make the comment that they couldn't possibly witness the signature because they're seeing impaired. I'm just wondering if, I mean, if it's a valid signature, it's a valid signature. That seems like that should be the bottom line right there, not whether the person could actually see the ink flowing from their pen.
Currently, Representative Thatcher, this actually makes no difference in the way we're interpreting current law. We've never had that issue come up under current law. I don't know how we react to that, but
I guess if it hasn't become an issue, why are we changing it?
Madam Chair?
Yeah, I think I could answer that question because I think the issue that has been raised here repeatedly is that it's become common practice for people when circulating these petitions to sometimes leave a clipboard just lying out, you know, somewhere where there's nobody really attending it. And so we want to clarify, and I think the language on this draft copy does make that clear that, what it says with an exclamation point is this certification must be signed by the circulator. You should not collect any additional signatures on this sheet once you have signed and dated the certification exclamation point. And then, you know, the language that they're witnessing all the signatures. So we really do want to make that clear. We've had testimony that sometimes it wasn't clear to people that they shouldn't just sign this as soon as they got it. So I think this language that's highlighted there is pretty straightforward.
Hi.
Yes, Representative Roblin.
This is a question that came up from some others, and I should ask it. When you do the electronic template, you're still going to have to print it two-sided, right? You have to get the other side on it. Is that clear on it? I mean, because that's sometimes a difficult task.
Well,
I hate to say it, but when it comes, the first page comes out when I sign it. I sign it and I put it back in. If I don't get it in the right place, it comes out. It's not what they want. So is there any way to make that easier? I mean, I don't know the answer to how to do that, but it has been a problem, at least in my case. Getting my double-sided has not been always as easy as I would hope.
Representative Roblin, we have been discussing that issue, and it is our attempt to try and make that as easy as possible for people and try to avoid that.
Okay. We heard testimony that was not always easy even for the petition gatherers earlier, so thank you.
Okay. Please go ahead.
Okay, just a couple of other things, Madam Chair. Just to emphasize the old requirement that sheets be, that all the signatures on a single sheet come from voters in the same county is now gone with these amendments. Okay. And it's a very important change. It does raise the signature requirement from 25 to 1,000 to obtain a ballot title, but those 1,000 signatures would count towards the overall signature threshold requirement.
And I also want to clarify that that's a significant reduction from what was originally proposed.
Right.
Can I go?
Yes, Representative
Roblin. Well, I was just thinking about the electronic petition. You know, you don't need to have all of those signature places. It's going to have just one line. Couldn't you print the stuff on the back on the front?
That's what we'll be looking to do.
That would be really helpful.
Yeah.
Again, Representative Roblin, we are trying to make this a single sheet.
Okay.
I mean, we've heard this loud and clear, and we're very supportive of it. So
okay.
We want to make it work.
And the way it's written, you believe that's okay for you to do that by rule?
Well, we think so, but
We have to do something for you. I would like it to be there.
Yeah.
So you can do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
The CNA reporting sections would simply make the chief petitioner's electronic filing requirements consistent with that of all of the other political committees. Right now they are not. And then I was going to talk about the electronic signature form, but you've already asked me about that.
Madam Chair, could I ask about the filing?
Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you. My concern was, you know, a opponent campaign, what are their requirements for filing now? And is this addressed?
Their requirements are that they are not required to file anything until an initiative becomes a measure, and otherwise it's qualified for the ballot. And they become a group that's opposing a matter on the ballot. That's when that requirement kicks in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we wished, could we make the reporting requirements take place during the signature gathering process as well? Is there anything that would stop us from doing that?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, that's... You're the legislature. You can do anything you want, right?
Not anything.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Roglin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question is the one that Representative Hunt got out of the one seat about, and I don't know if we're that far yet to ask that question, but the alphabetizing of the seats, or does it just have to be
We don't see that in the amendments. When that was being discussed, Brenda and I were looking at it, and all we saw is it said they needed to be supported by or sorted by
the name of the name.
Yeah.
And so some people believe that if it's by the name means by alphabetical by the name. It doesn't say that. So if you're just saying each one comes by a petition, the way I read it was the same as you are, that if it comes and they're separated by individuals who gathered them, doesn't matter what order they are in, just so they're by that person, correct, then I don't think it's as big a problem.
Right. Well,
if that's the testimony, that it is not alphabetical, that's...
Yeah. Our reading is consistent with yours, Representative Roman.
That's for member page 12, it's section 11, 1C, and it states, when filing an initiative or referendum petition, the chief petitioner shall sort the signature sheets on the basis of the name of the person who obtained the signatures on the sheet. And so it does not say alphabetized.
Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead,
okay. The only thing I would have concern about that is that being a person having been in a school, when you make that kind of a statement, the assumption is it's alphabetical by name. Just stating it that way does at times imply that you're going to sort them. When you say by name, the implication is, well, why would you be sorting if it wasn't by alphabetical? I mean, that is an assumption oftentimes made. So I just need to make sure that it's clear.
Perhaps
that here,
the rules could make that even more clear.
That's what I would hope, yeah.
Because that's clearly not the intention.
Yep, thanks. I agree.
And that completes my comments, Madam Chair.
One other question, Madam Chair, since we have Mr. Lindbergh?
Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
The way the dates work out, that is fine with the Secretary of State's office in terms of when each part of the amendment goes into plan.
Yes.
Yes.
I do want to put on the record, from my perspective, I really applaud the idea of going to a one-sided sheet. I am not certain that this gives you the ability to do that in this bill. And so I want to make sure that the intent of all of ours here, if this were to happen, is that a one-sided sheet for the purpose of electronic filing would be possible. I mean, unless we have put something in here that says that explicitly to give you that power. I'm not sure it's here right now. So somehow I would love to make that explicit because I want to give you that power.
Okay.
Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I still am questioning the inclusion of an emergency clause in the end. If this isn't to take effect until after this general election, why do we have the emergency clause in there?
Well, I guess my answer would be consistent with the answer of the chair's earlier, which is that some of the items we need to start working on, some of the items do take effect sooner than 2008. But the inclusion of emergency clauses and so on is, you know, I'm no expert on that, Representative Thatcher.
just to follow
Speaker
up.
Bill for Florida, yeah.
I guess I question it because it seems like the only thing you cannot refer to the people are things with emergency clauses in it, and that's why I'm wondering if this was an attempt to keep that from being referred.
I don't know, because, you know, we didn't, as far as I know, we didn't ask for that. But.
Well, it was in the original bill, however.
Oh, okay.
So. I think, Representative Thatcher, that was not the intent. But the intent was to allow this to start moving forward, even though it wouldn't impact initiative petitions that are currently in the bill.
Yeah, I understand that. I guess I was thinking that it would be appropriate to get the process moving along and get the infrastructure, whatever needs to be set in place, and it still can be if the emergency clause in there, because it already says that some of these items as far as requirements for petitioners and signature gatherers don't apply until after this upcoming November election. So that's why.
Okay, other questions for these witnesses?
I guess
Representative Thatcher.
We were talking about the ordering of sheets, and if they are, for some reason, considered to be out of order, would it be disqualified?
And just to clarify, do you mean in terms of sorting by the
right,
signature
we're
gatherer?
We're talking about sorting.
I don't know that they have to be in any particular. Oh, you mean if they submitted some and they weren't in. In precise order.
The order that you prescribed by rule, apparently.
Right.
If they were not in order, does that disqualify a sheet?
Well, it depends on what the rule says. And we haven't developed these rules yet. But generally, what we have tried to do in the past is, if it's simply of a matter of two or three sheets, we want to avoid a situation where people come in and bring their petitions into us and don't follow the rules. I mean, in the past, they had to number all the sheets in sequential number, and the statute was very specific on all of that, where they simply sort of throw the sheets at us in the flurry of the deadline, and we have to spend hours and hours and hours sorting them like they should have been sorted. And it has not in the past resulted in the disqualification of large numbers of sheets, except for there was one case where in the Nader petitions it became an issue because the statute was very specific about the sequential numbering of sheets. So,
But right now, if some campaign comes in with their petition sorted by county, and inadvertently they get a Clackamas County sheet mixed in with the Washington County ones, what happens then?
We put it in the correct county sheet.
And you still count the signatures?
Yeah, as long as everything else, the sheet is in order.
Yes, Representative Thatcher? Okay, and Representative Roblin.
Yeah, thank you. Just to follow up on that, because now the only real sorting requirement is that they come together by the petition gatherer, basically. So if you have a petition gatherer who gathers a whole bunch and then later does some others, if they ended up in two packets in there, same person, because they didn't realize that the other person had already done it, that would not necessarily be a problem, is what you're telling me.
Well,
and if it's all the way through, it might be a problem.
We try to look at the explicit wording in the statute, and I don't see anything in that statute that says that if we got two different stacks of Jeremy Ravencroft rather than one, that we would, we're expected to disqualify one stack.
In other words, you would not be disqualifying signatures because there were two stacks with the same signature.
Right.
Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
I'm still trying to get my mind around it. Can you tell me what's the reason behind doing this? I can understand in some respects in terms of paid petitioners who are trying to, that might be a way to determine if the hours match up with the signatures gathering, whatever. But what's the overall reasoning for making sure it comes in by petitioner name, and by signature gatherer name?
Well, I can tell you, this, frankly, this wasn't originally our idea, but I can tell you why we like it.
Okay.
One is it makes it easier for us when we're comparing the exemplar of the signature provided by the circulator on their registration form to the signature sheets, to have all of the sheets for that petition in front of us. What we've seen a lot is we've got a whole bunch of different people working on sorting the sheets and looking at all the different signatures, and logistically, it's difficult when you've got all these different people looking at signatures from the same circulators. And even though we've got 20 people down there working at a time, you know, we may have a circulator's name written on the board, you know, isolate those signatures. It's easier to look at those signatures if you have them all in one place. Frankly, but and I think that I would invite you all to come down and observe the sorting process and participate for a couple of hours. I think that you'd all find that enlightening. We did have Representative Merkley come down and observe last time. It's quite a process. And we have lots of observers. And there's a lot of looking at these exemplars and going back and looking at the signatures. And I think it would be very, very helpful for them to have them sorted by the signature gatherer. It would make that process administratively much smoother for us. And then if there are any questions also about or challenges to a particular circulator, we have all of those sheets already sorted. Right now we have to go back and go through thousands and thousands of signature sheets and pull out all of those sheets by the same circulator. And that, of course, is a very tedious and cumbersome process.
Madam Chair, just a comment, yes. One more question. So this would, and I said it would put on the chief petitioner or the campaign, it would put the kind of sorting process on their shoulders to do. Would you be willing to entertain the idea of, you know, because maybe there's signature gatherers who gather two sheets worth of signatures or whatever. For someone who gathers less than 50 signatures, would be maybe exclude those sheets out of this process, and a campaign, it's almost like campaign contributions. If contributions less than $50, we report them as a lump sum. Would this be something that you'd entertain in rules to say over X number of signatures, they'd have to be sorted this way?
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. It raises questions in my mind about, you know, them having to figure out whether or not they've reached the threshold of 50, and then what we do if they don't. And
I mean, Representative Buckley, I assume you've probably done some signature gathering. I know I have. And right now, if you have counties where you get, you know, one or two signatures, you still have to sort those.
Yeah,
so.
The county.
Yes.
Thank you.
Same. Through Representative Buckley.
Okay. It's the same kind of thing. I'm just thinking, with my paid people, I can expect them to sign it exactly, you know, the same full name, the whole works each time. We, having seen the process for some of these other petitions, they'll get the template, they'll send it out to these people that do it out in these counties, and this all of a sudden they'll get somebody that goes gung ho and collects a whole lot. But most of them get the one sheet. That's
right.
I'm going to do my one sheet. That's all I do. That one's easy to sort because there's only one sheet. Others might do 10 sheets. The concern I have, and they sign it. I mean, they're signing it. I hate to say this, but I'm not sure it's the same person that signed it. So did I get it in the right place?
Right.
I've seen some of those signatures, and I commend the people who look at that signature that's on the card and look at the... I would never sign up for that job because there's an awful lot of them that don't look the same to me. And so I'm thinking, I just want the process to be such that a technicality about having it not in the right place doesn't hurt somebody's
right.
work.
That's basically it.
That's my concern, I guess. I'll leave it at that.
And I think
I don't want that to be the reason.
I mean, these ones that come in with just one signature, the electronic versions,
That's not going
to be. That those aren't witnessed by anybody, so they're not subject to this requirement, obviously.
No, but it's the person that's out there gathering the 50 or so.
Well, we did have one petition in the last cycle that, I mean, their numbering of their sheets was really a disaster, and we had two or three staff members spent the equivalent of almost 2 days renumbering their sheets. Well, our staff shouldn't have to do that.
I agree.
You know, that's, we've only got 30 days to deal with this, and that's really a responsibility of the petitioner.
I agree.
But where do we draw the line? You know, if we, these are tough issues for us.
Yes, they are.
Tough.
Representative Thatcher.
Since we're on the theme of sorting here, I heard it mentioned, I think Chair Rosenbaum mentioned that you still have to sort by county now, and that there's only 36.
Right.
You could have upwards, I mean, some of these grassroots campaigns, you could have hundreds of circulators. And it seems like that would kind of put it, I don't know, I'd make it even more difficult for these grassroots type of operations. It's almost like it push it to, well, we don't want to have to deal with so many. We're just going to go to paid signature gatherers, and it's only going to be, we'll only have 50, you know. So we only have to deal with 50 of them rather than, I don't know, it just seems like an extra burden. I know what you're trying to get at, but I just, I'm not sure if this is the answer.
I really invite you, Representative Thatcher, to come down and join us in the sorting process. I think, I mean, you may still feel the same way after you do that, but really, suggestions and observations are welcome. It's a very, very difficult task for us, and it's a very high-pressure task, and we're often working on the 4th of July and all that kind of stuff, and we've only got 30 days, and we're dealing with hundreds of thousands of signatures and tens of thousands of sheets, and sorting them by the circulator, given the requirements of this bill, I think would be very helpful for us in administering the process.
Okay. Any more questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony and clarifications. I want to point out to members also that we have received by email, and I think you have in front of you today, some written testimony from Dan Meek, from Osberg, and I believe from someone else.
Chris Henry.
So, members, I actually had a chance to read that last night. Hopefully you have as well. And members, we are in a work session.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Buckley.
I would move the -5 amendments to House Bill 2082.
Representative Buckley has moved the -5 amendments to House Bill 2082. Is there objection to the amendments? Seeing none, amendments are adopted. Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2082 as amended to the floor with a be passed recommendation.
As amended.
Thanks.
Representative Buckley has moved House Bill 2082 as amended to the floor with a be passed recommendation. Discussion. Yes, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to make sure that it's on the record that we would love to see the Secretary's State's Office make a one-page electronic version. And I don't think that it's possible in this bill, but I, therefore, on the record, I just want to make sure that we understand that, and if it needs to be changed, if this makes it through to the Senate, that they look at that, and if they concur, that they put it in there, that gives them the authorization to do that. I would love that, and I just think it needs to happen, and so I want to make sure that it's possible.
Thank you. And Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Roblin. The huge issue that we're tackling here, I want to thank your staff for spending so much time on the issue, and Dr. Stenbridge as well. And I would echo part of what Representative Roblin said. I don't think we have this perfectly yet. I think there's still some questions in terms of the sorting issue or other issues that have come up. And I look forward to continuing the discussion, hopefully on the Senate side, to make sure that we get great as much clarity as we possibly can in this very complicated process. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your comments. Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate all the effort that has come around this subject. I think it's a very important subject matter. I just don't believe that what we're going to be sending out of this committee is actually in the best interest of Oregonians. I would like to see us, kind of expounding upon what Representative Buckley was saying, have a task force or some sort of assignment to pull all the stakeholders together and come up with a better product rather than just saying, oh, something needs to be done and here we are. It almost feels like it's more of a top-down solution rather than collaborative, and I guess that's what I would suggest. I obviously am not going to be supporting this bill as amended. So, though I do believe there are some good things in the bill, I think the bad certainly outweighs the good, and so I won't be supporting it.
Thank you, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for amazing work on this very complex set of issues. I especially appreciate the changes, both that were in the original bill, but that were made in these amendments that do help protect the volunteer signature gatherers, that we are setting a different level of standard for those who are paid signature gatherers, and I think that's very appropriate. I do, frankly, prefer the original number of signatures that were required, the higher number for to meet the threshold in terms of ballot title shopping, but I'm willing to live with the lower number.
Okay, thank you, members, for your comments. I want to just say that I think we have worked very, very hard on a difficult bill. We had four separate hearings on this bill, so probably more than we've had on anything so far, perhaps on anything we will have all session. I think that we made a real effort to take into account the testimony that we had from supporters and opponents of this bill. This bill has significantly changed since what was introduced, what was presented as amendments to that bill, and I think we have dropped totally some of the most controversial provisions of the bills. Specifically, I would point out, not only did we drastically reduce the number of signatures to get a ballot title to accommodate those that said it was too high, but we also completely dropped the prohibition on what's called writing, or, you know, making changes to these petitions or filling in blanks that had been left blank, and those certainly were some significant changes. So I think that we have really done our best. Obviously, it's difficult to come up with a perfect bill, but I think we've come up with a very good bill. And so with that, will you please call the roll?
Aye.
Aye.
Nope.
Excused.
Aye.
Excused. Aye. Motion carries. And the chair will carry this bill on the floor. And members, with nothing further to come before us, although I will point out that we do have hearings on Monday, and those will be both in the morning and in the afternoon, so
Please save the times for Monday.
Yes, we're meeting Monday morning at our usual time at 8:30 to hear invited testimony on SB2 and House Bill 2007, and then we will be meeting at 5:30 to hear some legislator testimony, invited testimony, but the bulk of that will be public testimony, and that will go until 9:30 in the evening. So please come prepared for a long day, and we appreciate your participating. Yes,
there was discussion of a Tuesday.
And yes, meeting. Representative Thatcher, thank you for that question. We had just, I think while we were in here this morning, hosted a work session on the same two bills for Tuesday morning at Mr. Stenberg's?
9:30.
At 9:30.
Hearing room E.
Same room. Okay, and with that, we are adjourned.